Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on the zero emission future that we all hope for. I'm Paul Kirby, and every week I'm joined by one member of the EV Cafe team. And this week, again, I've got John Curtis. John, welcome again.
That's again, you've said twice. Do you want me to go? Shall I leave now?
Again, please, yes. Right, no. Again and again and again, we invite and collaborate and enjoy the time with pioneers and people making a difference in our industry. And this week is no exception. We've got Laura Schleicher from Schleicher.
Perfect.
Schleicher. There we go. German. I got it in the end. Laura Schleicher from Geotab. Laura, welcome to us.
Thank you so much for having me. That's amazing. Really excited. My first podcast, so be kind.
We can't promise that, I'm afraid. But Laura, it's exciting because, obviously we do a little bit of research, usually desktop, and we talk to people. And of course, I am very lucky to have had the pleasure to have worked a little bit with you. So there's a number of good things amongst that, because what I hear is the coffee room chat, you know, about who is Laura Schleicher? And Laura is a pretty amazing person from all of the talk, right? This is the talk, not even the fact that you've been to Maastricht University, you've done a Cambridge sustainability diploma or whatever it's called. I mean, they're all really cool things because you are not only bright, you've taken the time to learn and educate yourself, but you also got a really good reputation. You seem like a nice person. So we're very happy to have you.
I hope I am a nice person, but let's see today how it goes.
Well, 1 out of 3 of us isn't bad.
But so, Laura, you're the Corporate Sustainability Program Manager, which is a bit of a mouthful. Tell me, what does that actually mean?
So, yeah, first of all, again, thanks for having me. And more than happy to talk a bit about the role and kind of what's going on in my life as well. But Corporate Sustainability Program Manager is definitely a mouthful. It's working in corporate sustainability. So I'm part of a very, very small team. It's just 3 of us, and I'm working with a Canadian team. So the rest of my team is based in Toronto, where our headquarters is, well, near Oakville. And we're focusing on everything that's related to implementing sustainability within Geotab. So within the company, from employee training to our scope emissions, so our environmental footprint at the company, working with the operations team, tackling our supply chain, making sure it's ESG compliant. It's still a very small and young team. We've been in this constellation since like a bit over a year now. So we're still trying to figure it out, but it's amazing learnings. We're learning together and growing together as a team. So yeah, that's kind of the short version of what a corporate sustainability program manager is about.
But that's what you touched on there, Laura, I think is something that many of us are all beginning to realize, that there's no real experts anymore, because we're all on this journey, which is exponential, right? It's a J curve of a journey. It's going up and up and up. So what does that look? Because, I mean, look, when I look at your profile and I look at your journey, it's been one of a lot of learning. So I mean, you started learning a long time ago. In 2014, right? Your first internship.
Yeah.
You've been a lifelong learner, and you know, still just a baby. Only in comparison to me, of course. What got you so focused on learning about sustainability in particular?
It's a really interesting journey. So since I can remember as a little kid, I loved spending my time outdoors, right? I know nowadays, and I don't want to judge any parenting styles, of course, but a lot of the kids just have their iPads and iPhones. And when I grew up, so I'm still that old, there wasn't any iPhones and iPads around, right? So, and actually my parents, they had a backyard, and behind that was a little forest. So we used to spend hours and hours in that forest and kind of building wood cabins and all of this. It wasn't really wood cabins. It was just like a couple of wood sticks put together. But we were like, oh, you can totally live in there. But that's kind of what got me started, being out in nature and just having this kind of interest in nature and the bugs flying around and all of this, you know, kind of, oh, this is interesting. Like so many different leaves, you see the seasons changing, and that's just really interesting. So, but then I got into high school and kind of just learning more about, oh, what you can do in the world. And for some reason, after high school, I thought it would be a great idea to study finance and business. So I went to Maastricht. This is where the fun begins. So I went to Maastricht University, because it's just like half an hour from where I grew up in Aachen, Germany. I went there for the open day, wanted to learn more about the program, international business with a finance specialization, and I got into the wrong lecture hall. So I ended up at the liberal arts and science faculty, which I didn't realize until I was in the lecture hearing about the program. And they started talking about humanities and social science and sustainability and kind of putting together your own curriculum. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. It's not finance. It's not IB, but it sounds really interesting. So, I ended up applying for that program the next day, never thought about IB and finance again, and kind of discovered my interest in sustainability as I got along. Like, I really didn't have a proper plan what I wanted to do as part of this liberal arts and science program. People at home were asking me if I was doing arts and crafts. I was like, no, this is not what the study is about. It's very difficult to explain, but my first class at uni was actually globalization, environment, and development. And this is really like my professor there. He really got me excited about the topic of sustainability and kind of open up my mind of what's happening in the world, what businesses can change, what individuals can change. He had this really like positivity that he was spreading in the class, where I was like, okay, this is not something that's just dooming over us, but it's something where I can have a contribution and make something, like make an impact, make something better. So this is kind of where I went along, and I knew I had to learn a lot about it because I didn't have any idea about it. So I took several classes. I took especially a lot of classes when I was abroad in California at UCSB. They have an amazing environmental studies program. And you can never stop learning in the field because there's so much to happen in the future, like with the net zero goals and renewable energies, and everything's just changing constantly. So you got to keep up. And that's also why the learning has to keep up. So, yeah.
Amazing. Do you know what? The whole image of, I mean, I grew up in a village as well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, getting out, I mean, the one thing that I remember doing with my dad years and years ago, and actually it was, I loved climbing trees, mm-hmm. because my dad would cut them down. So what he would do is get the permission from a local farmer, because there was a Dutch elm disease, right? Mm-hmm. That was a thing back when I was young. And the trees would be stripped bare of their bark, they would be dead, no leaves on them, and all of that sort of stuff. And what you saw, I mean, it wasn't to do with necessarily sustainability. This was a bug, right, that had got into the trees. And you saw that. But I love being in the woods. Yeah. I love being in the forest. And what we have is this natural kind of link with them, don't we? Because they provide us with oxygen. They give us life in many respects. So interesting that your journey started there. Mm-hmm. But I'm gonna ask John, because I know John's loving to chat with you as well. So John, go for it.
I'm fascinated by your journey and the fact that it's an almost accidental walk into sustainability. And I think Paul and I share that journey. Who sets out to be a sustainability expert? And I wonder, after your eight years of learning, could you pass on a little bit of knowledge for us? Because there are lots of people who will be listening to this who say, climate change, there's always been climate change. We had the ice age, and then things warmed up and it was incredibly hot, and then it got cooler again. Mm-hmm. And they say it's a natural process. Stop your meddling and just allow it to happen. Climate change, is it real, or is it just part of life and we just have to suck it up and accept it?
It is real. Unfortunately, it is real. And I'm really glad that you're saying climate change and not just global warming, because I know this is also a really tricky field, because a lot of people are just saying, but it's not getting hotter in my region. No, but you're experiencing more floods, heavy rain, droughts, whatever, right? So it's really the climate that is changing. And if you look at the figures over time, kind of, as you mentioned, there have always been ice ages, and but the temperature change has really only been a couple degrees, right? Like 3 degrees, for example, to an ice age, like if there would be the temperature higher or lower. So it is definitely, the climate has always been changing, and that is good. That is just how Earth works. But you can specifically see that at the end of the 19th century, our climate has just gotten higher and higher. It's like this famous hockey stick figure that everyone talks about, right? So you can really see once industrialization picked up, and especially in the global north, how all of the emissions have increased. Humans do have a direct impact on the climate, and you can just see it accelerating and accelerating over the years. And it's shocking to look at, because I think a lot of people are just in denial because it's such a topic that is far away from them, right? Especially, and I totally get it. Like my grandpa, for example, he's in his mid 80s, and he's like, oh yeah, but the climate always changed. But he's not going to be around when the climate is changing so much that it's impacting his life, right? And we're going to see climate immigrants, right? Because there will be certain parts in the world where people can no longer live. So it is a very sensitive topic to a lot of people, but I think because it has such a huge impact that a lot of people just don't want to confront with the fears and everything that comes along with it. Because yes, the more you think about it, the more scarier it gets and the more depressing it gets if you really think about it, what's going to happen. And really interesting is also when you look at how emissions have changed over the years, CO2 and methane, they stay in the atmosphere. So methane is, of course, also like agriculture and where all of those emissions come from, and then CO2 from cement production, transport, all of this. But they stay in the atmosphere. So CO2 stays in the atmosphere for 100 years and longer, but methane stays in the atmosphere for over 900 years, which is insane. Does.
You had to go there.
If you think about it, everything that we're still emitting today and everything that was emitted like 50 years ago, it's still going to be around for much, much longer than we think. So it's a tricky one.
And I guess that's why we focus in on cows in particular, because people have said, oh, go vegetarian, right? Yeah. And it makes a difference to the atmosphere. And I'm like, how does eating vegetables help the atmosphere? But it actually stops us relying on meat. Is that right? Have I got that right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah, because the cows, they are emitting quite a lot of methane, and also the food that is being fed to the cows, because that comes from agriculture, and agriculture production is like the number one sector that's part of the methane problem. So, and then you have methane leaks, of course, and like everything that's underwater, methane that has been built up of pressure over the last thousands of years. And once the temperatures get hotter, whether that is in the ocean or on land, those methane, the ice around the methane melts, right? And then the methane gets released. So this is kind of like this devilish cycle that's just reinforcing everything. So when the temperatures get hotter, we get more emissions because they are released from like ice ages ago. So, and it's something that nobody really talks about, actually.
Laura, do you have an emotional connection to the environment? Because I know when I see a devastating clearance of woodland in the rainforest, it hurts. There's a physical, I'm sad. I can actually feel a great sadness at the loss of habitat, the loss of wildlife, the loss of a way of life for the indigenous people, which makes me incredibly sad. Do you have that emotional connection, or is yours purely a scientific, this is what we need to do, and if we follow the science, we'll all be okay?
So I think it's a bit split. I think during my work every day, it's definitely more scientific and kind of having that tunnel vision where I'm like, okay, we got to find solutions, right? This is the way we can do it. We can improve it. So kind of having that, keeping that positive attitude, because if you don't, it's going to be really tricky to kind of keep up with the work. But from in my private life, it definitely hurts. Like, it hurts to turn on the news. I'm no longer doing it, actually. Like, I know, because I'm the generation, like, I go on TikTok, I go on Instagram, right? I'm getting all the information that I need. No, it really is like that. But if I'm really turning on the news, it's just negatives after negatives. And it definitely hurts. And it does affect me, and kind of also thinking about, do I want to have children in this world at one day, right? Like, do I really want them to grow up in a world that where we don't know if biodiversity, like, how will biodiversity look like? Everyone's talking about climate change, which is totally right, but biodiversity, and this keeps us alive, right? This is everything that keeps us alive as humans. So
just explain that for us. So for those who aren't aware of the difference, so biodiversity, okay, so what do you mean by that?
Everything that lives and breathes, basically. So from plants to mushrooms in the ground to animals living on our planet, everything that lives and breathes, because it's what keeps us alive. So when we talk about biodiversity, we also talk about ecosystems, right? So ecosystems are responsible for providing us with resources, for regulating our air, our water, like everything that we use as humans and depend on. And biodiversity is just everything that you can find on our planet. So, and it gets very tricky because climate change is impacting biodiversity. It's impacting the variety of biodiversity. And this is, yeah, it's a really tricky topic because it's something that comes along after climate, kind of after climate change, after the climate is changing and everything. That's what we're going to experience, and the focus is not really on that, which is a problem. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's incredible to be talking like this, because I've got to say I'm not sure. I've come across somebody that is able to articulate this quite as well and as listenable in this respect. So I'm actually learning really, really lots. So it's been really helpful. How do you link all of this to your work? Because obviously working for Geotab, you know, they stick a telematics device in a vehicle that tells you where the vehicle is. And I mean, it tells you some other stuff, which I know we know, right? But so why Geotab? What is the value of this data, this insight to the sustainability journey? Because, you know, a corporate sustainability program manager, you know, you're doing this, you're responsible for it, for the globe, right? And, or, you know, playing a part in making a difference. How do you see your work making a difference to what you're clearly so passionate about and understand so well? Why have you linked that with Geotab?
Yeah, that's a great question, Paul. And so when I did my studies and kind of continuing the learning journey, I always knew I wanted to start off in the corporate world from a sustainability perspective, because for me, that's where you can achieve the quickest change. Politics take a very long time, very long talks, of course. So I knew I wasn't really seeing myself in that specific area. So the corporate world it was. And kind of a bit similar to be fully transparent, similar to how it got to my studies, it also got to Geotab. It was more by coincidence. So because it was COVID, it was end of 2020. I had very different plans after my undergraduate studies, but with COVID, they got a lot of different things in the way. And yeah, Geotab has an office in Aachen, in my hometown. And I started off in the marketing department because I did take like one marketing course in university, and apparently I was qualified enough to do that. So. But no, during the interview process, I already mentioned I'm really passionate about the environment, about sustainability. And I got reassured directly that Geotab does focus on this. And it's amazing. I was just looking through the website and I was seeing sustainability solutions for cars and vans and everything. So that was super interesting. And of course, also the EV part. So I was like, okay, let's try something new. That could be really interesting. And then the more I continued my journey at Geotab, it's really a company that focused on data, and data means transparency, right? So transparency is so important for sustainability because we want to show we don't just want to do the greenwashing part where we wear our kind of words out to our actions. So we really want to focus on the core of what can be done, how can we measure it, and how can we report on it. And this is exactly the core of what Geotab is doing. So yeah, I kind of switched then gradually from marketing to sustainability specialist to now corporate sustainability in particular. But over the years, the work that I've done was really focused on bringing the sustainability topic to the customers, because for a lot of people still, telematics, what Geotab does, the core business, and all of this is kind of part of, I want to bring my costs down. I want to measure my fuel. But at the same time, you can also do this from a sustainability perspective. It's not that you have to do one or the other, but it's really something that is interconnected and kind of links to one another. So when you measure your fuel management and you want to bring your fuel costs down, you're also bringing your emissions down at the same time by reducing idling. Or, you know, this is really, it's not one or the other. It's not sustainability or profit. It's really both. And kind of bringing that closer to people at Geotab, but also to the customers, the partners we work with, that you really can integrate this triple bottom line. So people, planet, and profit into your business. Was overall a great way. And this was kind of my main focus areas for the last 2.5 years. And then specifically in corporate sustainability, it's about learning about our emissions. How do we report on it? How do we measure it? So we have the scope one, scope two, scope three. And how do we learn how we can actually impact this? And again, data comes into this totally, because our scope three emissions, so everything up and down of our value chain, is the scope one and two. So the vehicles, whether that is EV or ICE vehicles, from our customers, actually. So it's also, this is all interrelated. It's not separate, but it's really an entity. And looking at how we can tackle this at Geotab is really the focus area of my work.
Fantastic. And I mean, we've touched on a lot of acronyms, yeah, and a lot of, but it's okay. We can come back to that.
Perfect.
Because we will.
Okay.
We don't allow acronyms on the EV Cafe. We've been very kind to you so far, but But I know Geotab have just released their sustainability and impact report.
Yes.
You know, which is the Gen 2 version. So we've had version 1, which I think was around COP26. Mm-hmm. And now we're seeing the follow on. Now you talk about, and I'll use the acronym, you can explain it for us, the UN SDGs, mm-hmm, right? With scope 1, scope 2, scope 3. Now, to Luddites or people that are not quite so up on all of the TikTok generation, we don't know what these things mean. This is a new language we're talking.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
so,
totally.
You know, we're thinking transport, and the language of transport is one thing. We've got energy, with the language of energy is another thing. And then we've got the language of sustainability, and it is another thing again. So we've got three languages that are merging into one. Talk to me about this sustainability and impact report. Talk to me about the UN SDGs. Talk mm-hmm. to me about scope one, scope two, scope three.
All right. Okay. That's going to be a bit. So
sit back and relax, everybody.
But yeah, let's start with the sustainability and impact report and kind of maybe the rationale behind why we're doing this, because Geotab is a private company. Technically, we don't have to do it, but this is really important to for us to show to our customers and partners that sustainability and ESG, and this is another acronym, I'm going to explain it in a sec, but something that we focus on and we don't take lightly. So the report is called Sustainability and Impact Report because it combines environment, social, and governance. So this is the ESG part. It does not only look at the environmental perspective, it also looks on what the company is doing on a social level and on a governance level. That's really important when we talk about sustainability, that we're not just thinking climate change, environment, biodiversity, what we just talked about, but it's also the people behind this, right? It's the social perspective. It's the workers, the employees, like everyone that's involved, like us humans, which is really central. And then the governance part. So how are we overseeing this? What's the structure? Kind of what's the process like? Do we have compliance policies, like whatever we have in place? So this is really what the report combines. And it is a piece for Geotabber. So this is how we call our Geotab employees, Geotabbers. It is also a piece for our customers, for our partners, for any external stakeholders, because it really summarizes everything that we have done in the past year from this ESG perspective. So now kind of moving a bit on to the UN SDGs. So this is the acronym for the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So this is a set of 17 goals that have been published in 2015 by the United Nations. And it's essentially a blueprint for a sustainable future. So it's also often called Agenda 2030 because they think they can, or when they released it in 2015, they thought they can realize it until 2030, but it includes goals such as end poverty, zero hunger, like all of this. And it's going to be very difficult to do that in the next 7 years. But it is essentially a blueprint that governments, states, regulators, companies can use to choose priorities for sustainable development, because you cannot focus on all the 17 goals. That's impossible for one single entity to do. But what you can do is pick and choose the few goals, like a handful, for example, 5 to 6 goals that you really want to focus on, and where you as an individual, as a company, as a regulator, as a government, see that you can have the greatest impact. So this is what we did in our sustainability report with Geotab. We chose actually a couple more goals. I think it's 7 or something that we want to focus on. And we distinguish clearly between customer sustainability. So everything that we can do on the customer side with our customers, with this product and the solutions we're offering. And then we have the corporate sustainability side. So where we see we can have the biggest impact. And it kind of helped us to guide us through our decision process on where do we really put emphasis on sustainability and on our works, because the year only has 365 days, Sundays, holidays, if it goes well. So we cannot focus on everything. So the UN SDGs kind of helped us define our focus areas, which are focused on definitely climate action. Responsible consumption production is a big one for us internally. Reducing inequalities from a social perspective, gender equality, which is a big one, sustainable cities and communities, affordable energy, and then also working together. So partnerships is really key for us. So that's kind of just summarized what our internal focus is on. So that's kind of on that perspective of the UN SDGs. And then I think the last part of your question was the scope emissions, right?
She's good. She's really good.
Okay. So the scope emissions. So we have three scopes. So when we talk about greenhouse gas emissions, we have three scopes. We have scope 1, scope 2, scope 3. And scope 1 is all your direct emissions. It's everything that is directly produced by your company. And that is the natural gas that you're using for your facilities and the vehicles, so the ICE vehicles. Scope 2 is everything that's indirectly, but also really part of your company, right? So that would be electricity. You cannot, that's indirect. And electric vehicles, actually, because they use electricity. So that's also where it's kind of changing. So in the past, we always said vehicles, always scope 1. Yeah, but if you have electric vehicles, it's going to shift and it will be part of scope 2. So this is all what's really directly related to your company and everything that you can have control over. And then the really tricky part, and the one I struggle with the most, and I think every sustainability team does, is scope 3. So this is everything upstream and downstream of your value chain. So everything that happens before your product and everything that happens after your product or service, right? So it can be upstream emissions from transport, products and services that you're buying. It can be the different materials. So everything where the suppliers before that stage are involved, and then downstream of the supply chain is the use of your products. It's the transport of it. It's the waste, right, of your products. So everything and so many different parties that are involved as part of this scope three, where data becomes so important, insights into data, measuring data. And we ourselves struggle with this. It's a big learning journey because a lot of companies don't disclose their information as transparent as they should, right? And if you have more than 100 suppliers or more than 400 or 500 suppliers, it can get very messy. So accurate data for an accurate representation of that scope three of your value chain emissions is so important, because for Geotab, scope three is 98% of all of our emissions, 98%, wow, which is a huge amount. And that's pretty common, yeah, for software companies, actually.
Right.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Laura,
thank you.
You're clearly a highly intelligent human being who's a great communicator. And I'm a little bit, sad, if I'm honest, because I hear a rumor that you're leaving the commercial world to go back to academia to study further. And I've got a couple of questions, I guess. What the heck extra do you need to know? Because you are phenomenal. But more importantly, how do we cope as a business community when talent like yours, which is in a business and has a massive opportunity to change, decides that academia and learning more is what you need to do? Because we need you. The business world needs you. We need more of Laura and not less. How do we cope when talent like yours goes back into academia?
I think, so the first step is I'm just leaving for a couple of years, and I hope it's see you later.
We don't
not a
have
goodbye.
2 years.
Yeah, no, we'll see. But I think I'm still pretty young, right? And there's still so much to learn about sustainability and kind of what we want to focus on, and so much more. So I really just hope to gain more insights in the next 2 years. Really focus deeply on methods and everything that can still be learned, because there's so much more, believe me, there's so much more. Yeah. But yeah, I really do hope that I can just learn as much in the next 2 years and then come back stronger, hopefully, again to the corporate world. And I'm just excited to see what happens in the meantime and cheer everyone on from the side. So
before you disappear, what is it that you have achieved in the time that you've been with Geotab that you personally are proudest of?
Okay, that's a great question. I love it. Two things I would say. So one, when I came to Geotab, I know the focus on sustainability was certainly there. But I think one of the greatest achievements is just educating the Geotabbers around me, educating our internal staff. And I don't want to sound this in like a teacher, professor way, oh, I'm educating you, you know, but no, it's really spreading awareness. And so for example, a couple of days ago, I was at the office and someone came up and was like, so it was for a marketing event. And they were like, oh, I'm actually looking into more sustainable alternatives, right? Or also how the entire setup is. And I was like, I'm so proud of you.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's my influence or if it's just like the overall consciousness evolving. But I'm so happy about that. And it's really like people start just picking up, right, bits and pieces. And I think that's fantastic. So that's the one part, just spreading that awareness, because I think you cannot talk too much about it, actually. And then the other part is just being part of the corporate sustainability team, and really bringing that, as Paul called it, the Gen 2, second gen sustainability report out, because people often don't know what actually goes into such a huge piece, right? It's like 60 pages long. It's a team of three in the corporate sustainability team that try to bring this together. But then, of course, you have the marketing team, the PR team, like everyone's so supportive. But at the core, it's kind of our baby, right? And we want to make this good, really good, and as transparent as possible. This this should not be a marketing piece. And I think we did a really good job compared to our first version. A lot more transparent, a lot more data, and a lot more data to come in the future reports. So
clearly one of your team is a penguin if it's Gen 2.
Yes, indeed. moving on. Moving on from penguins. In fact, it's one of my favourite films, actually. Happy Feet is brilliant. Just watch
such
that.
It's such a good movie.
I'm going to go and watch it straight after.
I would go with the more cerebral March of the Penguins myself, with Morgan Freeman doing the narration.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I'd go and watch David Attenborough if I was wanting to be, you know, cerebral about all the penguins.
I always need to cry when I watch his like documentaries. It's
I've just realised, Laura, you're wearing black and white, and therefore you are the penguin. You are the Gen 2.
I'm black and white in the background here too. And the orange, and the penguin has some orange
parts,
right?
Gen 2.
Yeah. Absolutely. There you go. Gen 2 penguins. Anyway, so we mentioned David Attenborough in there, and for many people, he's an inspiration in this sector. I mean, has somebody motivated you, inspired you? Is there somebody in the world today, maybe in your personal life, mm-hmm. Close to your personal life or in the wider world? I mean, obviously excepting John and I, but, you know.
Of course,
I know
course,
we're an instant. Yeah. But put us to one side if you can for just 1 minute.
It's gonna be hard, but I'll try.
but is there somebody that's been an inspiration?
Totally. David Attenborough, I think, is a great example, especially recently. Like, everything he produced and released on Netflix is amazing to watch. But there's definitely one person in my private life that has really impacted, I think, my journey, because a lot of, like, especially also now working in an industry, right, that is very male dominated, so to say, it's sometimes very difficult as a young woman to kind of find a role model, because you're like, okay, but all of these men in executive positions and doing all the great stuff, sure. But is there a place for young women to do the same? And that's actually something that I'm really, really passionate about as well. And also really happy that I am on this podcast, right, with all of these great other women and men that have been here before, but really kind of showing that there is a place for young women, maybe just out of university, in the field of sustainability. Mm-hmm. But when I was abroad in California, one of my professors in the course, I think it was called like Water Supply and Demand or Global Water Supply and Demand, something like this. She was from the East Coast in the US, and she was such a power woman. She was amazing, super strong, well-educated, great communicator, a mom. So she was really everything at once. And she was also talking quite a bit about her personal life in the lectures, which was great. And I remember just sitting there and being like, I want to be like her one day. She has everything. Like, she has this job, but she also has her private life, and she's passionate about sustainability. She was doing amazing research back in Cambodia, actually, and she was just really into the field, but having that passion, having that drive, having that motivation, and being able to motivate other people. And I think without really knowing it, she really had an impact on me and my career as well, because sometimes I'm just thinking of her and I'm like, that's actually, this was great. So
what's her name?
I can't remember her name. That's the embarrassing part. I can't remember. I'm so sorry. I was actually just thinking about this right now. I was like, what is her name? I need to give her a shout out, but no, I can't remember it. This is so embarrassing.
But do you know what, Laura? Let me help you feel better on this, because there was
that's hilarious. I mean, I forget names all the time, but I've got age on my side.
Yes. So I will tell you ever so briefly. My first job was with a library suppliers. Mm-hmm. Not surprisingly, driving a van. So I didn't go to university. I didn't get any qualifications. I was, you know, I'm not bright like you and all that kind of good stuff. So I was driving a van. But on my first day, I smashed it up.
Oh, no.
And first day, First Ooh. Job ever.
Ooh.
I drove the van into the side of another car. And it was not a good day, right? So I got back and it took everything in me to drive that vehicle to the place. John knows the whole backstory. We won't bore everybody with it now. This is the very, very first job. I had a lot riding on this. And I walked in and I managed to force myself through the door. And then, anyway, he wasn't there. His wife was, handed her the keys. She sort of looked at me disappointedly. And and then I went in the next morning to speak to this guy. And he looked at me, asked me to explain it, then said, "It's not going to happen again, is it?" And I went, "No."
No.
I mean, I'm like, well, I was young. And he went, "Okay, go on, get on with it." And that was it. That was the conversation. And he was an inspiring guy to show, you know, real courage to invest in me going forward. Obviously had immediate, we had a connection, a good recognition, and he kind of saw something in me and I can't remember his name. And I feel deeply sad about that, genuinely, because he's been an inspiration to me.
Yeah.
And he gave me my first chance. I can't remember his name. So maybe you're off the hook, Laura.
With, like, the people that truly inspire you, you're just forgetting their name.
That's it.
Their presence just,
They're so big.
Yeah, exactly.
They're so big in your life. Yeah,
it's,
there you go.
Crisscross.
I'd high five you right now.
Yeah. You're done, you two. Honestly, you forgetful souls.
We're done. Sorry.
Laura, question for you.
Yeah.
I'm kind of getting to wrapping up point, and I think my question for you is, knowing everything that you know, if you could wave a magic wand and change one thing about human nature to improve our prospects and to reduce climate change impact, what would that be?
That's a big question for the end, isn't it? No, but I love it. It's a great question. And honestly, when we talk sustainability, when we talk climate change, if I had this magic wand that I could just be like, whoosh, it would be systemic changes and system thinking in people, right? It's because let me explain it, especially, and I'm going to target EVs a bit. I'm sorry, Paul. But when you think about it right now, and also the work that we're doing in the company that I currently work at, but also in the world, it's a lot about replacing one thing with another, right? Mm-hmm, so great. Replacing vehicles, ICE vehicles, with EVs.
Yeah.
But think, is it the right way to move forward, sustainability, and not just thinking about the environment, but we have cities that are full with cars, right? Full with cars. But 90%, at least in Germany, I don't know about the UK or other countries, but 90% of the time in Germany, a vehicle is parked, right? Just taking up space.
Yeah.
And if you think about it, like the rent, I'm going a bit to the side, but from a social perspective also, the rent for those cities, like take Munich, a parking spot in Munich for a car for 1 year, 60 euros, kind of around 60 euros per year. But then if you think about rent, that's like 1,000, yeah, for a month, basically, and more. So if you're looking at it, something's not right, right, when we think about it. So I'm really hoping that if I had this magic wand, I would just change the mindset of people and thinking about those system changes, and not just replacing one thing with another that seems a bit more sustainable, but tackling it from a more holistic point of view, especially when we talk about vehicles, smart cities, right? Thinking about that. How can we increase life quality in cities? I'm not saying that EVs are bad. Absolutely not. But do we really need to replace every single ICE vehicle with an EV? I don't think so. So no. Yeah, that would be my answer.
I love you. I just love you. That's what I love about this podcast, you know? I didn't know you, Laura, before we started this 40 minutes ago, whatever it was. Mm-hmm. And in the course of this recording, I've discovered somebody who absolutely gets what's going on in the world. I'm 58 this year, and it's taken me a whole lifetime to realize the things that you have learned in the last eight. And it gives me great hope that one, we can solve the problems, but two, it's important that people make connections in life, because I know that with your permission, I'd like to stay in touch and continue to learn from you, because you are just a lively, enthusiastic, intelligent, articulate, fabulous human being, and we may never have spoken. So thank you, because we have.
Thank you. Yes, I'm so excited about it. No, this was amazing, just sharing the thoughts and having the platform. So thank you so much, John and Paul. I really, really appreciate it.
Oh, jeepers, let me tell you, Laura, the privilege is all ours, genuinely. I'm not sure I've spoken to somebody that can articulate the things that you have as well as you have, and it's certainly not in this context. You know, do women have a place? Can women bring something to the answer? You've answered it perfectly with a resounding yes. I mean, we've spoken to people that on this podcast, like Sarah, who is, you know, Fiona Howarth, you know, women that are really, really already making a huge difference. And you absolutely, you know, stand alongside those women, and will continue to do so, and then bring what you bring, because it's absolutely spot on, and we have really enjoyed today.
Me too.
Laura from Geotab, thank you so much for spending time with us today. It's been amazing. I've learned so much. John's learned so much. We've smiled so much.
We did.
Which is the important bit, right? Mm-hmm. To do all of this in a way that makes us smile and engage. Hopefully, everybody out there, you've listened along and enjoyed what you've been listening to and smiled. And that magic wand of systemic change, that idea that, let's make a difference in a way that is not just replacing one with another. Let's think about this. That's a great thought to leave us on. Join us next time with another great interview with another innovator, pioneer, and collaborator in our industry. Check out the EV Cafe. Head on over to Geotab to learn about the sustainability message that Laura's talked about, the Sustainability and Impact Report you'll find there on their website. Lots of other great insight that will support you on your transition to EV, but more importantly, your transition to sustainability. Have a great day, everybody.
Definitely. Thank you, Laura.
Thank you.